Thank you very much. Good afternoon, and thank you for inviting me along to your day today. Before I start my talk, I'd like to ask you all two questions, and if you can raise your hand or throw something at me or indicate otherwise to give me an answer, I'll be very grateful. Can I first ask who has heard of the carbon reduction commitment? Fantastic. Second question, can you raise your hands if you work in an IT function within your organisation? Can you now raise your hand if you work in an estates function within your organisation? Right, very interesting. Okay, for those of you that work in estates, this is probably going to land on your plate. For those of you that work in an IT environment, you can help your estates department by contributing to their target and making your overall performance in this scheme better. I work for a company called AEA. There's the blurb. The important thing is, that we are the government's framework contractor for developing the rules for this scheme. So theoretically, if we don't know it, no one knows it. That's not to say that I know it all. Secondly, if any of you have used the DEC email address to ask a question about this scheme, it's very likely that one of my colleagues answered that question for you. The carbon reduction commitment itself is a mandatory auction-based emissions trading scheme. It's part of the Climate Change Bill, Climate Change Act now. It applies both to public and private sectors organisation. And one of the key things is that when you identify the liable organisation, the legislation applies at the highest parent organisation. And we will talk a bit about that in a moment. In essence, you need to purchase allowances from the government at a starting rate of £12 per tonne of CO2 to match your forecast emissions. That money will be given back to you plus or minus a percentage dependent on your relative performance against the CRC cohort. There are no university league tables or supermarket league tables. There is one big league table, and you will be judged against everyone else. In determining your liability, the first question you need to ask yourself is, do I have a half-hourly meter? If the answer is no, you can pretty much leave now and forget about the rest of this because you are not covered. If the answer is yes, you're going to have to do something. If your energy use through all half-hourly meters was greater than 6 gigawatt hours, sorry, and that's electricity use, in 2008, you will be covered by the scheme. If it was not, then you're not covered, but you will still have to do something, because one of the things about this scheme which makes it slightly different from other schemes applying to industrial energy use, for example, is that you actually have to declare whether you're out or in, and if you don't do that, you will fall foul of the rules. In determining where the responsibility for complying with this legislation lies, it's quite clear, it is he who pays the bill. In technical terms, the counterparty to the electricity supply contract is the person who is responsible for managing the liability under that scheme. Which throws up a number of oddities. Landlords could find themselves responsible for tenant emissions. Energy service companies or agents who procure energy on behalf of another organisation might also find themselves responsible themselves. The key issue for those groups, if they find themselves liable, is that someone else's energy use is costing you money. And what we're encouraging organisations that find themselves in this position to do is to develop some sort of cost recovery model which actually allows for pass-through of any carbon costs associated with someone else's energy use for which you are responsible, but also to try and be a little bit cuter than that and to think about building into that cost recovery model a benefit delivery model. So we're taking away, but based on their energy use, we've also got to give a chance to give that back as well. Some landlords might also find themselves in the interesting position of having multiple tenants, and in fact a lot will, and there's also the sort of scope to create almost a mini league table within that portfolio to further incentivize tenants within that portfolio to save energy on their behalf because they'll be paying less in terms of carbon, but they'll also get a greater benefit if the group as a whole receive a recycle from the scheme rather than a penalty. There are particular rules around franchises, and I mention these now because the same rule set applies to some universities. As far as we're aware at the moment, those universities are University of Durham, Oxford, Cambridge, and there's a question mark around the University of Wales. Where universities have a collegiate structure, they are being treated in the same way as a franchise. And that is that the university itself is the responsible person and will take charge of the overall liability, but the colleges will be what's technically being termed an associated person. And the regulations, which are currently out in draft and for consultation, mean that the associated persons, colleges in this case, have a legal duty to report their emissions to the responsible person, the university, in order that the responsible person can comply with the legislation. This rule set has the same sort of challenges as landlord-tenant challenges. Data management is certainly going to be an issue. Ultimately, the responsible person will be responsible for the overall liability, and thus any problems with data management will fall at their door. But also that the scheme economics, the university is not going to control energy use in any given college. So some sort of system of incentivization of energy reductions within the associated persons could be developed to create the most economically efficient from the solution for the university as a whole. There are also some rules around subsidiaries, and I include these. There are some cases where they could be relevant from my point of view. Any subsidiary, and I guess I'm really talking about colleges or centres which might be independent of the university themselves, if they have their own energy consumption of 6 gigawatt hours or more in the period, they will be reported separately. They will also trigger baseline changes if they're sold or disposed of, which I consider less likely within this environment, but you never know. But the important thing there is that they will be listed alongside the league table as well as the university itself. Likewise, if there are any joint ventures that have a 50-50 ownership, they will also be reported separately, and they will actually have a separate liability. And again, it strikes me that there may be some cases where a university has partnered with a commercial organisation to develop a centre for something, and if that's on a 50-50 basis, then that centre could be eligible for CRC in its own right. Where that partnership isn't 50-50, it's much more simple. In the case of this joint venture here, The whoever's got the 70% ownership carries the responsibility for that organisation's liability in regard to the CRC. In submitting your footprint, you're required in the first period of the scheme, April 2010, April 2011, to submit your entire energy use consumed for non-transport purposes. And that would be any fuel use and also any fuel use covered by other legislation. Now, climate change agreements aren't going to be relevant here, but there are some universities who have an EU ETS liability. You've got to report everything so that you then can determine what your 90% inclusion is. And it's the 90% that the government are really interested in. The idea here is that it gives liable institutions some flexibility. And you know, if meter 221 is behind the locked door in the bottom of the basement and we don't know where the key is, we may wish to opt that meter out of the scheme if it's eligible, just to make the process of managing the scheme more straightforward. the 90% is what your performance will be judged on when it comes to determining the your position in the league table and the degree of bonus or penalty that you will receive back. It's a financial year compliance cycle, and that's a government financial year. My suspicion is that most of you will also follow an April to March financial year. Is that correct? Lovely. In which case, you're not going to match that financial year. And so you need to put in place a system which is actually going to operate outside your probable current budgeting processes in order that you can report your energy consumption in accordance with the government's financial year. Each year you'll need to provide your evidence pack, which is a summary of the energy consumed and a list of the sources at which that energy was consumed. Apply rules, and these are detailed in the current consultation document around any energy from renewable sources, any auto generation, and also any heat from combined heat and power. Report this at the end of July for the previous financial year and surrender an equivalent amount of allowances to the calculated emissions. There is no requirement to engage a third party to audit your figures, unlike the EU emissions trading scheme. This is intended to be a self-certification scheme. In our experience, self-certification often costs a great deal more than getting a third party in because of the amount of due diligence required to make sure that you're actually happy with the data that you're submitting. What will happen after that is that roughly 20% of liable installations will have that evidence pack audited. It's estimated that the Environment Agency are going to pay for around 1,000 audits a year. That audit strategy will not be random. It will look at the best performers, particularly complicated businesses, and those businesses or organisations where complexity is suspected. The chances are that within the first 5 years of the scheme, all 5,000 organisations will probably be audited in some shape or form. A common private sector response to this legislation is, well, what's stopping us cheating? And the answer to that is, well, the chances are you will be audited. If you're found to have been cheating, i.e. fraudulent, then you can go to prison. If you're found to have made a mistake, you'll get fined. And here are some of the fines. Not insubstantial sums, and I think the key thing is that once you've passed that initial threshold, the fine itself can build. Let's take an organisation with a 100,000 tonne a year emission liability. If you don't provide your reporting, you've got an instant hit of £5,000 plus £5,000 a day for 40 days. It can soon become fairly substantial. And if you don't keep out of records, £5 a tonne. The important thing to note is that we're actually beyond the first milestone of this scheme now. 2008 is over, so we can work out whether we are liable or not. Once we've made that assessment of liability, we can actually start to understand what the size of that liability is and put steps in place to manage that liability in an effective way. At some point this summer, the government are going to write to every half-hourly meter in the country, which means that many of you will receive multiple letters alerting the operator, alerting the recipient of the energy from that half-hourly meter about this scheme. This is the first part of the sort of government promotional campaign, as it were. Later this year, you'll receive a registration pack which will require you to say, yep, I've got a half-hourly meter and I will have to do something under this scheme. That registration pack needs to be returned with the assessment of I am over 6 gigawatt hours or I am under 6 gigawatt hours in mid-2010.
But at that point as well, from April 1st, 2010, the scheme goes live, and you will find yourself liable for the emissions from energy consumption from that point. Now, we spoke earlier briefly about this whole idea of the 90% rule, and there will be two activities running in parallel starting April 2010. The preparation of the preliminary report and the preparation of the actual report. And really, you do need to track all of your energy consumption over that period, because if you don't know 100%, it's very difficult to determine what the 90% that you're actually going to opt in is. So, before July 11, you'll need to submit to the government a statement of what your full energy use for that period is, along with a statement of what you wish to see included so you meet the 90% rule. There's some discussion about whether you would wish to include more than 90% of your energy consumption, and there are certainly scenarios where that might be desirable if you could see opportunities to make reductions from stuff in excess of that 90% you might wish to go up. If you knew you were going to dispose of assets that during the course of the scheme which would result in energy reduction, you might wish to include those as well. The caveat to that is that once your inclusion goes beyond 90%, it cannot drop down again. So if you go in at 94% in the first year, you can't go to 92% in the second year. A lot of interest in this scheme is focused on the league table and the sale and recycling process. Because of the implications to an organisation's cash flow, the timetable of the scheme changed recently. The intention was that the first sale would be in April 10 prior to the scheme starting, but that's now shifted back 12 months, because then the government would have had your money for 18 months without paying you any interest on it before giving it back to you. That's shifted back, so the first sale will actually now occur in April 2011. And you will have the opportunity to buy from government allowances to match your emissions for April 10, April 11 at a rate of £12 a tonne. You will also have the opportunity at that point to buy allowances for April 11 to 12, the year ahead of us, should you so wish. So in essence, you've got the opportunity to make a double payment at that point. You will get that money back, broadly speaking, plus or minus 10% in the first year, 6 months later. So really the value at stake is, broadly speaking, 10% of the money that you actually put into the scheme in the first instance. And that process continues onwards. One thing to note is that you can bank allowances, so if you have a surplus in July 2011 when you need to surrender them, you can hang on to those, but you cannot borrow forward from the future date. The league table itself will be determined by a number of actions. An absolute metric, your absolute change in emissions compared with the previous five-year average. The degree in which your emissions have changed compared to turnover or revenue, potentially, in this sector's case, again, compared with the five-year average. And the degree to which your organisation has taken advantage of the two early action metrics. The first of which is the percentage of your meters which have been had automated meter reading equipment installed on them on a voluntary basis, and the second is whether you're a member of the Carbon Trust Standard. Think about those two early action metrics to start with, because they're important, because they will determine 100% of the bonus or penalty in the first year of the scheme. The Carbon Trust Standard requires you to measure your carbon footprint, and it's a bigger carbon footprint than that which is required by the CRC. The second one, and this is a difficult one perhaps, it actually requires you to demonstrate a reduction in your CO2 emissions, either in an absolute term, i.e. Total emissions, or a relative term, or in a relative way, but if you choose the relative way, it's got to be greater than 2.5% per annum. And the third one is that you're required to demonstrate good carbon management. And that's a bit of a tick box thing, but some of those tick boxes are demanding. You would need to require a director to have signed a carbon policy and things like that. When you consider if it's worth it for a CRC perspective, on a very straight basis, the costs don't always add up. We would encourage an organisation to think of it as an energy management or a carbon management tool, a process within which you can manage your energy use effectively. We then consider there to be significant benefits associated with that. The AMR metric is slightly different. This is more about infrastructure. It's about installing smart metering of some sort or other on meters which are currently manually read. There is a minimum standard in the documentation, and that requires that the meter is able to capture and store and retrieve or transmit data on at least a half-hour frequency. And that data has to go into some sort of software system which allows you to manipulate that data in a typical energy management way. There is no requirement that you actually have to use it. Like the Carbon Trust standard, we consider that really AMR is just good practice energy management. Sure, it gives you a kick with regards to CRC, but really it's about using that kit to manage energy down in your buildings to reduce cost and your overall environmental impact. Okay. Just to finish off, some of the things we're helping business and other organisations at the moment with, understanding the organisational structure, what exactly are you liable for? Looking at your meter structure once that's determined, because that is what will actually determine whether you're in the scheme or not. And obviously we have 2008 half-hourly meter data now. Once you've determined your liability, start thinking about what you want in and what you want out of the scheme and whether there is a cost or a benefit of including anything more than the 90%. And then really to move on to some of the core stuff. You know, I've talked a lot about the administration of this today, but really you're not going to do well in this unless you actually identify and implement emissions reduction projects. So getting some understanding of your abatement options across your estate is vital. We sometimes use a marginal abatement cost curve to prioritise those emissions reductions projects. Penultimately, think about what you as an organisation actually want out of the scheme. Is the money important to you? Is the position in the league table important to you from a brand point of view? Those things are not always, those things can be exclusive. For instance, one of the common things that we say is, well, why on earth should I do anything now? The scheme doesn't start until 2010, and that's the baseline, so really I should be planning my emissions reductions for 2011, 2012. And that's fine, but we reckon that the energy savings far outweigh the carbon benefit from any project implemented now. And lastly, to think about whether the early action metrics are suitable for you. Thank you.